regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about what's going on in Virginia. We're a little more than a month away from the ban on so-called assault firearms going into effect. Oh, and large capacity magazines as well. And a growing number of Commonwealth's attorneys in the Commonwealth of Virginia have stated that they will not be enforcing this new ban. So you have a couple of related laws, right? You've got the law that bans the sale, the transfer, the manufacture of so-called assault firearms and large capacity magazines. And then you've got another bill that bans the carrying of so-called assault firearms in most public places. And the prosecutors, growing number of them, I think we're now up to six, maybe six and a half or seven, depending on how you want to construe the statement of the Buckingham County Commonwealth's attorney, have said that they do not plan on enforcing these provisions. Perhaps the strongest language coming from the Commonwealth's attorney in Pulaski County, Virginia, Justin Griffith, who said in a statement to the Virginia Scope, quote, "Commonwealth's attorneys are elected to pursue justice, not merely to enforce our laws. Discretion is a tool that is utilized universally in every Commonwealth's attorney's office throughout the Commonwealth. Preemptive declarations are not a new concept. It is an approach that has been taken by both sides of the political aisle in recent years. Your local Commonwealth's attorney is your local gatekeeper of justice. This recourse or the recourse for Commonwealth's attorney's discretion is in the local ballot box. What you allow is what will continue, and I will not allow the constitutional rights of the citizens of our county to be overlooked. My county will not permit it, nor will we promote it. We damn sure will not celebrate it, and I will not prosecute those that invoke their rights. Come and take them. Shall not be infringed. Justin L. Griffith." I am very pleased to welcome the Commonwealth's attorney for Pulaski County, Virginia, on the program today. Reached out to Justin Griffith yesterday and quickly received a response. Looking forward to the conversation. Let's get right to it. Take a look and a listen. Attorney Griffith, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you, sir.
Hey, I appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I appreciate your comments. I said on X yesterday that the Pulaski County Commonwealth's attorney is my new favorite elected official in Virginia, based on your statement to the Virginia Scope. So, I mean, let's get right to it. I mean, you had this very strong statement, and I read it to our audience here. You have no plans on enforcing the ban on assault firearms, the ban on large capacity magazines, the ban on carrying assault firearms. What was this an easy call for you to make?
Well, before we get into that, I want to tell you, you know, I appreciate you saying I'm your favorite elected public official in Virginia. But my goal when we're done with today is to be your favorite elected official in the United States. So now that I got that out of the way, yesterday, no, sir, it was not a difficult decision. I had made a very, I would call, you know, low-key, calculated, you know, professional statement sometime last week regarding what I thought was the will of the people in Pulaski County. Which I want to elaborate later on about discretion, about the will of the people. But I thought my, you know, my press release was, you know, it was of the 100% professional tone. It seemed to be very well received. I'm smart enough to know that, you know, when you talk about the will of the people, that is not 100% of the people. Right. You know, there are going to be, you know, 20% give or take of the county that would not support that. But I hope that I've had an encounter with them either in the public or in my job as the Commonwealth attorney that they're willing to give me the benefit of the doubt, even if they disagree with that statement. So yesterday, the Virginia Scope took the time to do an interview with the Virginia Attorney General, Jay Jones. Mm-hmm. I've heard him speak before. I've been in a room with him. I've never introduced myself to him. I've never shook his hand. And during his recent election in November of 2025, you know, I was endorsed by the Republican candidate. I endorsed the Republican candidate. I did not feel the need to speak about my personal thoughts about the rhetoric, which it, well, rhetoric implies it's not true. So let me rephrase that. I did not feel the need to speak about what Jay Jones was going through. I didn't feel I needed to. I knew how my county was going to vote. I knew who I was going to vote for. So I made a very calculated decision to stay out of that. Once Jay Jones won the election, I did speak to numerous people about, well, this is the here, this is the now. He is the Attorney General. There are people that work in the Attorney General's office that I look up to, whose opinions I value, you know, who are patriots of justice. And you don't want to speak negatively about their boss in a way that might hurt the resources available to Pulaski County. So I continue to focus on Pulaski County. I made what I thought was a very professional reserve statement. And then I read yesterday where Jay Jones took the time to tell the Commonwealth of Virginia what Commonwealth attorneys need to do. And he said, enforce our laws. You know, I did not appreciate that. I have used great restraint for my opinion with him. His job is to be the Attorney General for the Commonwealth of Virginia. My job is to be the Commonwealth Attorney for Pulaski County. So I did want to take the time to point out to him what I think my job is and exactly how I felt about what he said.
And I think he did so very well. I mean, honestly, and I want to go back to a couple of things that that you said in your statement. You said that Commonwealth attorneys are elected to pursue justice, not merely to enforce our laws. And you say that discretion is a tool that is utilized universally in every office throughout the Commonwealth. You said that preemptive declarations are not a new concept. It's an approach that's been taken by both sides of the political aisle in recent years. You know, and I mean, you're absolutely right about this. You know, going back to 2019, 2020, you saw a number of Commonwealth attorneys in Fairfax County and in Norfolk say that they weren't going to prosecute low-level marijuana possession offenses. Some judges, I believe, in the Norfolk, Virginia Beach area objected to that. Case ended up going up to the Virginia State Supreme Court. Virginia Supreme Court said, well, you can't just arbitrarily say you're not going to enforce a law on a blanket level. So the General Assembly passed a bill, it was signed by Governor Northam, that said judges have to accept a motion to dismiss if one is filed by a Commonwealth attorney, unless there's evidence of bribery involved or some sort of, you know, outright discrimination. So discretion is built into the laws of our Commonwealth right now, right?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I would like to take the time to tell you that, you know, there are 120 elected Commonwealth attorneys.
Yeah.
As a general rule, we get together a handful of times a year. I enjoy that. I enjoy the collegial nature. I enjoy learning from others. I enjoy hearing from others. It's kind of a lost art to be friends with someone that you don't really agree on with anything. And it's a lost art. It is an art that is no longer the rule. I would like to think that I can help set a new standard for that. I will tell you that, you know, one of the consequences of my statement yesterday on social media was the negative talk of other Commonwealth attorneys from other jurisdictions. And that was not my goal. I can support them as a friend, but not understand their decisions. I will tell you that subjectively, each Commonwealth attorney genuinely believes what they're doing for their locality is what's best for justice. And let's use Fairfax, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's no secret Steve Descano is the Commonwealth Attorney of Fairfax. He campaigned on a platform. He was elected on that platform. He then used his discretion to not prosecute certain marijuana offenses. He then used his discretion to mandate his assistants not seek legislative mandatory minimums. He was then reelected. So he takes the will of Fairfax, implements it, and gets rearrested. Far be it from me to judge what Steve Descano does on behalf of the will of people for Fairfax. Where I got, for lack of a better term, irked yesterday was what's good for the goose should be good for the gander. I am now assessing the will of the people of Pulaski County. I'm implementing the same will for my county that is done in numerous other counties. And some have argued that it's dereliction of duties, that it's not incumbent of a Commonwealth attorney, but discretion is the linchpin of the criminal justice system. Discretion in our sentencing guidelines, in our charging nature, it is how our criminal justice system is formed. And I would argue the Commonwealth attorney is the backbone of that discretion. So I'm not going to sit down and lay down and be idle when I see discretion used everywhere throughout the state, and it's cherry-picked when it's okay. There is a senator, Scott Servell. He has always been kind to me. He has always been polite to me. He sponsored the bill that requires judges, unless there's bribery or blatant violation of protected classes, that requires judges to follow through with the discretion that Commonwealth's attorneys are using. This situation is no different.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I mean, listen, I think, you know, I think you could make the argument that every plea bargain that is offered to a defendant is a use of discretion on the part of a prosecutor, right? I mean, it's the prosecutor who decides, okay, we're going to drop these charges. We're going to possibly reduce the amount of time that an individual spends behind bars, maybe not even spend any time behind bars. But that's a prosecutorial decision. That is the essence of allowing you to make that decision on your own, prosecutorial discretion.
And discretion is based on what should be two things. You have the facts and you have the law. Sometimes you use discretion based on the facts. 18-year-old kid made a bad choice, not a mistake. That's kind of a pet peeve of mine. A mistake is tripping and spilling hot coffee. A bad choice is being 18 and committing a crime. You can use the facts that he's 18, he's seeking education, he has a good family, he's never been in trouble, to make a decision. Or you can use the law for your discretion. Let's just continue to talk about some discretion that's utilized by other Commonwealth attorneys. They will take a 20-year mandatory minimum for a certain weight of a Schedule 1 or 2 drug. They will take that law and they will say, off the bat, that's not justly. That's not what we're going to do. We're not going to seek it. So what we did in Pulaski County is I valued the will of the people. We are a sanctuary county. We are a sanctuary town.
Second Many Amendment are, sanctuary.
Yes, sir. Many yeah. are. Yeah, not the other one. many people will argue, well, that's just a farce. That really comes with no weight. Well, your Commonwealth attorney is the one that can bring the weight to the table with it.
Yeah.
So I took the law and used my discretion just as other Commonwealth attorneys do. And they do it every day. You know, a grand larceny, if you steal something valued at X amount of money, could come with a maximum 20-year sentence. That's absurd on 99% of the situations. And they use their discretion to reduce the punishment, to reduce the charge. You know, I've said it a ton, but discretion is the linchpin of being a Commonwealth attorney. And if you may indulge me for a little bit, I'll kind of tell you the evolution that I've had as a public official with the Commonwealth attorney discretion.
Okay.
Around 2022, there were some decisions being made across the Commonwealth based on discretion of elected Commonwealth attorneys to not pursue, for whatever reason, valid reason, justly reasons. The reasons weren't known to me to not prosecute certain crimes against children that were sexual in nature occurring. Our attorney general at the time, Jason Mieres, wanted to have the opportunity to then step in and take over for those jurisdictions that had declined. I went to the General Assembly. I advocated for the opportunity for the AG to do that. I thought if I don't see a path to justice as the elected official, I will be the biggest supporter of the AG's office that does find a path for justice in those cases. Many of my colleagues and my professional mentors were like, Justin, slow down, hold on. You know, you're comfortable with this administration and these set of facts, but you need to hold tightly to our discretion because the pendulum could swing, the administration could swing, and you may not want a new regime, for lack of a better term, being the ones to make decisions when you decline. And lo and behold, that's exactly the situation we're in. So I have previously advocated, you know, to be overstepped when you use discretion. And a handful of years later, you know, I have came full circle. I believe I was wrong to do that in 2022. And I'm glad that I listened to my prosecutor mentors from both sides of the aisle regarding that.
You've had, and I think, again, I mean, this is one of the things that that I like about you, honestly, is that you have had an evolution in a number of areas, right? And you're not afraid to talk about that. So whether it was, your evolution on, you know, the Attorney General being able to step in and override the discretion by Commonwealth attorneys to even your political affiliation, right? I mean, you were elected originally to Commonwealth attorney as a Democrat, right?
Yes. And regarding being able to talk about your decisions, so we have a fairly big staff here at this office. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always want to support them if they make informed decisions and decisions for the right reason, to where, you know, yourself could call, the Roanoke Times could call, and they could say, why did you reduce that charge? Why did you give that sentence? And you should have an educated and informed answer for every question you're asked. So transparency, I think, is one of the keys to success. I was an assistant prosecutor for almost 10 years. My mentor, someone who I consider my best friend, someone I look up to greatly, appointed me to the position. At one point in time, he was the local Democrat chair in Pulaski. I was honored to be appointed. When I was asked if I was a Democrat, you know, my answer was always yes, but, and I would give some explanations. And around 2020, you know, those explanations became more personal, hard for me to justify what I was being associated with. There were some parole board issues that affected our county. There was a man that killed a police officer in a neighboring county that got released and then committed another crime. There was some George Soros movement throughout the country. I was stopped at our local minor league baseball stadium, and I was asked, hey, buddy, are you a progressive Democrat? And it was at that point in time that I thought that I was unable to project myself in a manner that prevented being associated with the progressive movement and the Democrat Party. So I contacted the Virginia Republican Party General Counsel. I properly followed the rules. And now when I'm asked, you know, are you a Republican? It's damn right. You know, it's not, but yes. So, yeah, we have had an evolution of political parties. Our sheriff did it as well.
Do you think there's, and this is, you know, kind of outside of the legal realm, but just into the political realm, is there room, you think, for pro-gun Democrats anymore? You go back even 15 years ago, and a quarter of the Democrats in Congress, or at least in the House, were A-rated by the NRA. It's zero now. You know, we used to see Blue Dog Democrats, Southwest Virginia, Mudcat Saunders, a political operative, you know, who worked with the Democrats. And it was pretty pro-gun, pretty pro-Second Amendment. Is there room in the Democrat Party for somebody to be a solid Second Amendment supporter these days?
I think there should be.
Yeah,
we have members of our Virginia delegation that did not vote affirmatively for, you know, what I would call Virginia's feature limitation or assault style ban. There are Democrat Commonwealth attorneys that are, you know, the best pursuers of justice I know. A local city right down the road is the toughest, hard nosed prosecutor I know. Yes, I think there's room for that. They need a face. They need someone to step up and do that. But yes, sir, I think there should be. And yes, sir, I do think there is.
All right. Back to the Second Amendment for a second, because, you know, we've talked a lot about the ban on assault firearms, large capacity magazines. But there are a number of other, I mean, more than a dozen gun control bills that were signed into law by Governor Spanberger this year, at least allowed to become law. And a lot of them, you know, are crafted in such a way that it's not really up to your office to prosecute these things, right? When you're talking about like the establishment of a Virginia Gun Violence Prevention Center, I don't think there's really room for your office to get involved there. But are there other laws that are set to take effect on July the 1st that you have concerns with and that you do not plan on enforcing because you believe that they tread on our right to keep and bear arms?
There are some laws that are similarly situated to this one that I do have concern over. Being required to have a lockbox in your vehicle, you know, if your car is parked, is somewhat defies logic to me. You know, the one law that the VCDL is openly advocating against that I need to learn more about is the open carry. You know, of an assault style rifle. I need to learn a little bit more of that. You know, I'm very active in my community. I don't know, you know, sitting right here where the county has already banned that from happening. You know, I don't know what local businesses have banned that from happening. You know, I'm not someone that, you know, carries an AR style rifle when I'm coaching my son's, you know, 8-year-old rec baseball team. But I don't know if that behavior is prohibited already. I do need to learn more about that, to form an educated opinion on that. It's just not, it wasn't a problem here. You know, there's not people opening, carrying AR style rifles in an inappropriate way that is creating hysteria. So the need for that law is just not here. So that's why I did not focus my statement on those type of laws.
Okay. And you know, and I'm curious, I mean, again, you, and I don't want you to, you know, throw shade at your fellow Commonwealth attorneys if you don't think it's appropriate, but I've seen a couple of statements that, that couch opposition to these laws in terms of, well, I'm not going to enforce this against, you know, otherwise law abiding citizens. But you know, if somebody's committed another violent crime, I may tack on this charge. And I got to tell you, I have an issue with that. If the concern is that these laws are unconstitutional, then the laws are unconstitutional. It doesn't matter if somebody is, you know, using an assault firearm in the commission of an armed robbery, charge them with the armed robbery. But if you believe that it is unconstitutional to try to ban commonly owned firearms, I don't know why you'd feel like it's appropriate to tack on one of those charges. How do you feel about that? Are there situations, are there considerations where you might actually enforce one of these laws?
So not in Pulaski County. If it's okay. Unconstitutional for one, it's unconstitutional for all.
Yeah.
And as I released in my own statement, if you, you know, if there is a robbery committed with a BB gun and a person is placed in a fear of harm and it's, you know, robbery with a gun, one might argue the fear of harm of having two assault rifle style weapons pointed at you is a higher fear of harm. You could factor that in your punishment as being an aggravated factor. I just don't think the tack on of, so it's class one misdemeanor. So right. It comes with 12 months in jail at most. And the way credit for time served is given in Virginia, that's a 6 month tack on. If someone uses an assault style rifle to commit a murder, to commit a heinous crime, I believe the laws currently in place give you enough discretion to seek the appropriate justice without that tack on. Mm-hmm. Regarding some of the other statements that have been made, I tend to think they meant, well, if they're a felon, they're going to be charged. If they've been involuntarily committed, they're going to be charged. I don't necessarily think they meant, well, it's unconstitutional unless, you know, you fit into this classification of person.
Okay. Okay. You know, and I guess on a similar note, do you have concerns? I mean, again, right now, this is a ban. It's not a ban on the possession of assault firearms, right? You can't sell, you can't manufacture, you can't transfer. Apologies for the rooster in the background, by the way. That's Mario. He loves to chime in during interviews. If you are an FFL in Pulaski County, you know, should you be unafraid to continue selling AR-15s on July 2nd? Or are there other ways that, you know, this, again, the Attorney General can't prosecute these crimes. Virginia State Police, I suppose, could come in and make an arrest of that gun store owner. But how confident should an FFL be, or if somebody wants to transfer, you know, an assault firearm, quote unquote, to a neighbor without putting them through a background check? I guess even if you put them through a background check, it'd be against the law. How confident should residents of Pulaski be that that you know, other agencies aren't going to swoop in and try to take over where you say and the sheriff says we're not going to get involved here because we don't think a crime has been committed?
As long as you have a Democrat governor, a Democrat attorney general, a blue controlled Senate, a blue controlled House, an FFL holder should be concerned. They should not have a ton of confidence that they're going to be able to continue to sell those. They need to seek private legal advice outside of their Commonwealth attorney on that. Mm-hmm. I can control a Cam Edwards getting pulled over with a 15-round mag that you purchased in Bristol, Tennessee, July 5th, that was manufactured July 4th. I can control not prosecuting you for that. Regarding these retailers, the certain background requirements that are they have to go through in order to legally sell a gun, you know, that's not something I think that Commonwealth's attorneys can just, you know, bequeath them with the ability to continue to push forward. And one of my concerns with the legislation was, I've never met the governor, but she no doubt had a hand in qualified immunity of law enforcement officers not being attacked this session. She no doubt had a hand in mandatory minimums not being attacked this session. I fell into a slight lull of thinking she may veto when they rejected her amendments and they sent them back as is. I fell into a lull of thinking she may very well veto this. There could have been a reenactment clause to, okay, this is what we want. We're going to make them pass it again, this same version, and we're going to see if this is what they really want. They could have heard feedback from people like yourself, feedback like me, voted on it again. They could have adopted some of her her amendments. You know, as a Commonwealth attorney for Pulaski County, my duty is to my citizens of Pulaski County. One of the difficult things about Virginia is if you're an elected statewide official, your duty is to the whole state. And we are very diverse, almost with a Sharpie line that you could draw through the state with what the will of the people is. Mm-hmm. So it would be difficult being a state official to try to find that moderate answer. I don't think they did that in this case. I know they didn't meet what was consistent with the votes of my delegation or anyone else in Southwest Virginia. So some things could have been done differently that I think could have avoided, the current conversation we're having.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you're right. I mean, Governor Spanberger seems to have ticked off almost every group except for gun control advocates this session with her vetoes. That's the one interest group, I think, that's still all smiles when it comes to her performance, because you're right. I mean, a number of Democrats have complained about a number of her vetoes. A number of Republicans have complained about the things that she's been allowed to take law. And, you know, again, I mean, when you talk about the duties of a statewide official versus an official representing, you know, a conservative county like Pulaski, you know, doesn't it again come back to the Constitution? And what does the Constitution have to say? And I know that the Supreme Court has said in Heller, you can't ban handguns. You can't ban guns that are in common use for lawful purposes. I think that covers the assault firearms, quote unquote, that are going to be banned on July the 1st. But Supreme Court has not explicitly said, yes, AR-15s are protected by the Second Amendment. I get that argument. But do you think that the General Assembly, when it came to these gun control laws, do you think that they ignored the Constitution this session?
Well, I'll go a step further and tell you, I think 1939 Miller case, I like to call it the infantryman rule. I think that established the guidepost that would make this law, unconstitutional. Regarding Commonwealth's attorneys in the approach of unconstitutional laws, there are some different approaches that can happen. You could come out and say, I have concerns. I'm not sure. Kim Edwards gets caught with that 15 or more round mag manufactured after July 1, in possession after July 1. We're not going to prosecute him until we know more. You could come out and say it's per se constitutional. The General Assembly passed it. You could do what Jay Jones says you should do, and you should enforce the law. You get caught with that, you could get arrested. You could plead not guilty. The court could find you guilty. The court could sit you in jail for 6 months. 7 months later, it could be deemed unconstitutional. Oops, sorry, Cam. We took 6 months of your freedom. We can't give it back to you. You could take the approach that I know my friend, Commonwealth Attorney Ryan Mahaffey, and a handful of other Commonwealth attorneys are doing. You could do your own analysis, and you could say, when you factor in the will of the people, when you factor in Miller, Heller, Brunn, we think it's unconstitutional. We think the courts are going to deem it unconstitutional. We're not going to risk someone's liberty be taken right now, period. So there's some different approaches that you could take. Regarding the General Assembly, I would like to think that they took the time to make an analysis, to try to make an informed decision. And, you know, we can just agree to disagree that whether they got it right or wrong. I certainly don't think that elected officials would do things with malice. I just believe the courts are going to deem it unconstitutional. And I just think they got it wrong. But, you know, back to that lost art of getting along with people you disagree with. I'm not willing to assume that there was, you know, malice and we're going to, you know, go as far as we can, and we're going to be, so what if we're overturned? I would like to think that's not what happened. Many of the people that, you know, took the time to be on the ground floor level are not people that I associate with on a daily basis. So Jay Jones upset me yesterday when I thought he was talking about my decision, and he doesn't know me or he's never spoke to me. I don't know them and I've never spoke to them. So I think it would be wrong of me to have that assumption on them.
Fair enough. All right. Last question for you, because I know you got to get to work here. I don't know, Justin, if you are my favorite elected official in the country, definitely the top five after this interview. And I'll tell you, it's a pretty small list. I don't like a lot of elected officials anyway. So, looking at the state of the Republican Party in Virginia, I got to tell you, as a voter, I'm not happy. I think we've got a pretty thin bench. I'll be honest with you. I don't think I've ever said this during an interview before. I would love to support you as a candidate for higher office. Do you have any desire to run for higher office, be it a delegate, state senator, governor, attorney general, Congress critter? Do you feel compelled, or is there any part of you that says, you know, I should step up and do this? I need to do this.
Well, I'm going to give you a political answer from a political person. The two men behind me on their signs, Mitchell Cornett and Jason Ballard, are our current House of Delegate Representatives for Pulaski County. Travis Hackworth is our senator. Our delegation just does a kick-ass job here. They take the will of the people. They consistently vote in a way they know people want to. I am someone who fears complacency. I believe that it's the enemy of progress. I am not complacent. Inside this office is the Commonwealth Attorney, but we take on new challenges every day. That's how we grow. You know, I'm doing an interview right now with the podcast. That's not something I've done in over a decade. Right now, you know, to sound as political as I can, my focus is on my 12 o'clock appointment, my court on June 2nd, my district court on June 1st, making sure my staff of, I believe, 19 people is providing the best service to the county. But I am always looking to be a better version of myself. I am always eager to serve a wider public range than I currently serve. It is important to me for the opportunities that I have taken, that Pulaski County is included in that. It is my home. It's where my children go to school. It's where my wife works. If I do seek a different career path, it's important to me that Pulaski County will always be part of that.
All right. Well, for a political answer, that's a pretty darn good one, I got to say. And listen, I really do appreciate your time. I appreciate, obviously, your actions and your statements in support of our right to keep and bear arms. But I also really just enjoyed this conversation. I hope that you say this was your first podcast in a decade. I hope it won't be your last, because I'd love to have you back on the program at some point.
I will be welcome to come back. I would appreciate it. And look, the other podcasts I've done are, you know, based off just complete and utter tragedy. So it's nice to be talking about, you know, a hobby I enjoy, which is firearms. It's nice to be talking about constitutional things. It's nice. This is actually a very welcome topic from some other podcasts I've been on.
Well, it is like I said, it's a very welcome conversation as well to be talking with somebody who is standing up in defense of our right to keep and bear arms. And Justin Griffith, we thank you again for everything you're doing. We'll let you start planning for those court sessions. But thank you for your time today and look forward to continuing the conversation in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Well, my thanks once again to Justin Griffith for joining me on the program. I got to tell you, I just thoroughly enjoyed that conversation, and I do hope that we can have him back again in the very near future. Sometimes when you talk to elected officials, it's easy for them to fall into platitudes. And sometimes, you know, they give the stocky answers. They don't necessarily delve too far beyond the soundbite. And that was not the case. I mean, I really think we got some very thoughtful commentary from the Commonwealth's attorney, and I appreciate that very much. So hopefully, again, we can continue that conversation in the future. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Let's start there. With a case out of Cincinnati, Ohio, here's the headline. Somerset shooting suspect was ordered to take anger management classes. Hey, how about that? And why? Why was he ordered to take anger management classes? as part of a plea deal. Yeah. 29-year-old Taviance Maxbury is charged with a shooting inside of a bar in the Over the Rhine neighborhood. And according to the Cincinnati Inquirer, he had been ordered to take anger management classes and had been accused of pulling a gun on individuals at least once in the past couple of months. But I believe it might have been twice. Yeah, actually two times within the past year. He was on probation, Maxbury was, after pleading guilty to pulling a gun on a woman in her car last August, according to a Hamilton County court records. And then in February of this year, so just a few months ago, he was also accused of pointing a gun at another person, quote, during a verbal dispute. But prosecutors dropped that case in April. Back in August, Hamilton County Municipal Judge Brad Greenberg ordered Maxbury to take anger management classes as part of a condition of his probation for pulling a gun on that woman back in August. And a court entry, according to the Cincinnati Inquirer, shows that Maxbury did not attend those classes. How about that? How about that? So you get probation, you don't follow up with the terms of your probation, nothing happens to you, you get arrested a few months later, accused again of similar activity, pointing a gun at somebody. In that case, prosecutors just dropped the charge. Is it any wonder that Taviance Maxbury might feel like the law is toothless? He is now accused of opening fire inside the Somerset Bar and hospitalizing one person back on May 24th. One of the owners of Somerset, James Fisher, said that Maxbury waited outside the bar for at least an hour for the victim in this case to leave. He said Maxbury tried to enter the bar several times that afternoon, but he was denied security because he didn't have an ID. And then at one point, he allegedly pulled a gun on the bouncer outside, pushed his way inside the bar. The bouncer calls 911, runs from the bar to find a police officer. Over the Rhine has had some troubles in the past, so they may have had a heightened police presence there, even on a Sunday afternoon. As the bouncer's running back towards the bar, they hear three shots fired, according to the store owner or the bar owner. The owner, James Fisher, said the management's also taken a look at security across the venue, including closer coordination with police and additional training. He says bouncers are not currently armed. He said he has concerns about whether that would send the right message. Listen, all due respect to the owner, what message are you trying to send? To me, if you have a bouncer at the door, then what you were saying is we want to keep the riffraff out, right? If you have a bouncer who is licensed to carry a firearm at the door, what you are saying is anybody who has murderous intent is going to be met with lethal force. I don't think that the presence of an armed security versus unarmed security, if I'm going up to a bar and I see a bouncer there and the bouncer has a gun as opposed to visible. And by the way, if you're carrying concealed, what difference does it make? But if I see a bouncer openly carrying a firearm, I'm not automatically going to think, oh, man, this place must be violent any more than if I see a bouncer just at the door. So, honestly, I wouldn't let the message that you're sending get in the way of increased security. And if you are not going to allow your patrons to carry, by the way, then, yeah, you need to have armed security there because otherwise, what the hell's the point? I don't get it. Anyway, Maxbury is in custody at the Hamilton County Justice Center. He's on a $555,000 bond. He was charged with felonious assault. I believe he also had some crack on him when he was arrested, so he's facing drug charges. He's got other charges as well. Who knows how many of those charges are going to be dropped in a plea deal, but there were opportunities to deal with Mr. Maxbury. Including when he declined to follow through with the terms of his probation. But apparently nothing happened. Today's armed citizen story from Florida. Deadly Austin Town shooting believed to be in self-defense. Shooting took place on New Road near South Raccoon Road. I didn't realize that. Maybe is there a North Raccoon Road there in the area? This is from Austin Town, Florida. And the shooting itself took place earlier this month from a stemmed from a domestic situation between a woman and her ex-boyfriend that led to a road rage incident. According to WFMJ in Florida, the incident led to a crash involving the ex-boyfriend in a parking lot. Surveillance footage obtained by the TV station shows a black pickup truck spin out and then crash into the sign of a car wash. From there, the woman's vehicle, the woman's inside. She's got her two kids there in the car as well. There's another man also in the vehicle. They stopped to assist. But then the ex-boyfriend, identified as 30-year-old Zachary Fisher, gets out of his car. He's got a gun, starts running towards the woman's vehicle, which led to a physical fight between the two. From there, police say Fisher went towards the passenger side of the woman's vehicle with the gun in his hand. The gentleman who was in that vehicle then fired a shot at Fisher to protect himself and the others in the car. One shot fired, struck Fisher, who passed away from his injuries in the hospital. Mahoning County Prosecutor's Office says the investigation is still ongoing, but based on what they've seen so far, the evidence is believed to be an act of self-defense. Based on the description offered by WFMJ, I would think that is right. Now, I'm curious. Let's put it this way. I'm curious. Why would you stop to assist somebody if they've already been involved in a road rage incident with you? If it's your ex, they're acting aggressive, you see him crash, maybe again, you want to make sure they're okay, but you know what? You get the hell out of there. If you're concerned about the safety of yourself, the safety of your kids, if you've already, again, been confronted by this aggressive ex, you're under no obligation to make sure they're all right after their car hits a sign. Call police, tell them what happened, and get on your way. I am also curious, not having seen the surveillance footage, I'm curious how long Fisher and his ex-girlfriend, how long Fisher was physically attacking his ex-girlfriend before the passenger in the car got involved. Because remember, Fisher's running up to the car, he's got a gun in hand, starts assaulting his ex. At some point, then goes towards the passenger side of the woman's vehicle. That's when the passenger fires in self-defense and defense of the others in the vehicle. Again, I haven't seen the surveillance footage. I am kind of wondering why this individual did not attempt to come to the aid of the woman who was being attacked, but maybe it happened so quickly that wasn't really a possibility. Who knows? Again, according to police, the shot that was fired, according to the state's attorney's office, the shot that was fired in self-defense. So we'll keep our eyes open for any more details, but honestly, if the investigation concludes without any charges being filed, we might not get any more details out of this case. Finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing, an 85-year-old man in Oregon who helped stop a woman from being kidnapped and did so at great risk to himself, I should say. This is not a defensive gun use. This is not a citizen story. 42-year-old Matthew Aranda has been indicted by a jury in Jackson County for allegedly trying to kidnap a woman. He was posing as a utility worker, apparently. He used a stun gun to incapacitate the 25-year-old woman while she was working as a caregiver at a mobile home park. And according to police, Aranda had waited several hours before assaulting this victim. He was just kind of stalking her while posing as this utility worker. He then used the stun gun. Woman was able to escape to her vehicle, though, during the confrontation. They would say Aranda then chased the woman with a large hunting knife, jumped onto the vehicle's hood as she drove away. Deputies say that Aranda was injured when he fell off the hood. He actually broken his leg. The 85-year-old man apparently heard the woman's screams after Aranda tried to stun her, I guess hit her with that stun gun. He then confronted Aranda, which maybe gave her the opportunity to get to her vehicle. In fact, according to police, the 85-year-old man was hit with a stun gun as well by Aranda, which allowed the woman to get into her car and then drive away. So as I say, a great risk to himself, this 85-year-old coming to the aid of this 25-year-old woman. Don't know if she was his caregiver, if she was just, you know, if he just happened to hear the screams, what happened. But, I don't discount this man's bravery and his heroism. I think he is very lucky that he was not seriously injured, given that the suspect was also equipped with a large hunting knife, was apparently not afraid to use that large hunting knife, as well as that stun gun. I would never tell somebody, don't step up when you see somebody in danger. But what I would say is, if that's the type of person that you are, that you're not just going to let some woman get assaulted, possibly kidnapped, please, whenever possible, have the tools that you need to protect yourself and others. And I have just seen so many stories. I could have a segment almost every day on these stories, but it would be really depressing. Of, you know, people in the right place at the right time who are willing and able to do the right thing, but who suffered injuries or death because they were not equipped to take on an armed attacker or somebody with malicious and evil intent. Again, glad that's not what happened here. Glad the 85-year-old is going to be okay. Glad the 25-year-old woman is going to be all right. Glad to see that Aranda is in custody. You are innocent until proven guilty, so we'll see what facts are developed during the course of this case here. But that 85-year-old man, very thankful for his bravery. I hope that if he is ever in a situation like that again, that he has the means to protect himself if necessary. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always, and I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, though, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We're keeping up to date on all the latest segment of news and information from across the nation. California, the state senate has passed a bill that would ban most 3D printers. In fact, I think at this point, all 3D printers in the state, unless they can be verified to block the printing of gun parts. We've got multiple lawsuits that have been filed over the past 24 hours. Coalition filing suit against the Glock ban that was just signed by Maryland Governor Wes Moore. You've got a new challenge to the post office carry ban filed in the federal court in Pennsylvania. We are keeping our eyes on the waning days of the legislative session in Illinois, where the Rifle Act is the subject of a big push by gun control activists. This is the gun industry shakedown bill that says if you want to continue selling firearms in Illinois, you got to pay into this fund that basically holds gun makers responsible for the criminal misuse of their products. So we are keeping our eyes on a number of issues, and we still have, you know, a number of outstanding court cases. We're still waiting on the Third Circuit. I don't know if they're going to release their decision in the New Jersey gun and magazine ban case anytime, but it has been more than 6 months. So anytime you're ready, judges, we're ready for that decision. So we're keeping our eyes on the courts, on the state houses, and of course the culture war as well. And again, we've got it covered for you at BearingArms.com. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.